You're tuned in to On The Record with Beth Makovich. It's the first Thursday of September, so it's time to head into the language lab. Today we are chatting with Dr. Jess Crook about how language is constantly evolving, and we're going to look at Gen Z slang today. As a Gen Z, I'm familiar with the lingo, but I'm really interested in how these kinds of trends come in and out of action and what popularizes them. Lecturer in Indonesian Studies at UWA's School of Social Sciences is joining us now, Dr. Jess Crook. Thanks so much for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. So could you let me know what are some examples of Gen Z slang that are gaining a lot of attention at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, we heard a lot about RIS, the shortening of charisma last year as Oxford's 2023 Word of the Year.
Yes.
We also have GOAT, of course. There's the acronym for greatest of all time. Recently, with the popularity of Charlie XCX, we've seen brat in high circulation.
I wanted to mention that.
Of course. So how could we not, right?
No, I was just going to ask, where is that slang coming from? Like, what's the role of the internet and the social media in particular?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because a lot of these terms, like particularly terms like slay, pee, cap, giving, and eight, a lot of these actually originated in Black American English, particularly in Black queer communities, and then they spread throughout broader queer communities, and then, you know, they get used on large platforms like TikTok, and then kind of enter the mainstream, which is where people are kind of getting the impression that these words were created on the internet or on TikTok, but they're in fact a little bit older than that, or even sometimes quite a bit older than that.
Do you think that's damaging to Black communities and queer communities?
It certainly can be when, like, we get reach the point when the origins of these terms and, you know, their original meanings, and particularly their significance for marking kind of shared identity and membership to a marginalized community, kind of gets lost in the mix. And, you know, if we think about the reasons why a lot of these terms are adopted, typically what happens is, you know, young outsiders to these communities see bits of language that's specific to those marginal groups, and then they think, you know, oh, that's really different and interesting and exotic. And, you know, then they adopt some of that vocabulary, which leads, you know, other communities to adopt it and so on and so forth. And, you know, this kind of appropriation means that the terms often get so kind of far removed from their original context that they, you know, cease to function as, you know, markers of this kind of in-group identity.
That makes a lot of sense. So I guess it kind of loses that crediting the original people who use the word. Yeah. Something super interesting I've seen is how Kamala Harris's campaign has picked up on the term Brat Summer. How do you think capitalizing on Gen Z slang could help her in the upcoming presidential election?
Honestly, I think it's really clever because, I mean, brat is a really kind of clever term to use because, like, its meaning isn't, like, super well defined, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of have an idea as to what brat means based on its kind of, like, original referential meaning around kind of, like, something, like, a little bit, like, cheeky, naughty, but also, like, you know, kind of cool recently, obviously, because of how Charlie XCX has used it. So I think kind of jumping on that trend and associating, you know, Kamala Harris with that brand, particularly because, like, you know, brat has become one of those terms that's become very strongly associated with particularly like Gen Z, you know, women and queer people who are not necessarily going to align themselves with like Trump, obviously. It's quite a kind of clever move in that sense.
For sure.
I
guess along those lines, how does Gen Z slang capture the current cultural moment that we're in?
Yeah, I think it does so in like a few really interesting ways. So, I mean, one of the kind of most obvious points we can make is that, you know, given that a lot of these terms, if not, you know, originating in the internet, then obviously have become popular through use of the internet. I mean, that does show very clearly the significance of online spaces in proliferating kind of new language forms. And this, you know, makes sense because, you know, when you think about how online spaces work, you see a lot of interaction between people of diverse kind of cultural and linguistic backgrounds. So there's, you know, a lot of potential for innovation because each of those people kind of brings to the table their own kind of set of language resources, which, you know, when combined with those of everyone else they interact with, you know, give people the opportunity to play around with these bits of language and come up with some really interesting linguistic innovations. At the same time, though, I mean, with brat, right, we see, you know, the role that popular culture has had on language. And this isn't necessarily anything new because, of course, popular culture has lent itself to quite a lot of, you know, new terms. Like, you know, back in the day, there were like deadheads who were fans of the Grateful Dead. Like, you know, there was Beatlemania and stuff.
Yeah.
And now we have like Swifties and the Bayhive and, yeah, now Brat, I suppose, as well, right?
Yeah, like fandom names.
I think it just, yeah, right, fandom names. But like this kind of goes to show what fandoms, I suppose, like are getting like the most traction these days. And then I suppose on the kind of more bleak side of things, we can also see, you know, what are the kind of current concerns of Gen Zs as well. You know, with the rise of terms like cozy libs and greedflation, kind of indicating concerns around, you know, cost of living crisis and inflation and things just getting more expensive, as well as even like navigating relationships. You know, if we take like Riz for an example, right, like the 2023 Oxford Word of the Year, I mean, possible reasons for the rise of words like Riz might be down to the roles like dating apps in forming romantic relationships. Like, you know, just like Riz helps to describe how we can set ourselves apart from the crowd when we're competing with so many others for potential romantic partners, right?
So definitely some damaging sort of side effects of it. Do you think some slang could impact other issues we hear about, like the decline in Gen Z's education and those sorts of things?
Not to the degree that people often think. So people often think that slang poses a threat to the integrity of, you know, the standard language that we learn in schools, right? But this isn't really true, particularly because slang and the kind of formal academic language that, you know, teachers often prefer are typically used in different contexts. So, you know, even within a given classroom, right? So we'd use typically one form of language when talking with friends and a different form when we're writing kind of a formal essay. So the forms aren't necessarily in competition. And even if they were, like, the solution there isn't necessarily to, like, avoid or, you know, ban slang, as we've heard about in the news recently. You know, instead, like, a lot of research indicates that the use of kind of different varieties of language or codes, like slang and academic English, does illustrate that being able to navigate effectively between two codes and understand the differences doesn't actually limit your knowledge of the codes. It actually enhances it because you understand, you know, how the two are structurally distinct and how they kind of relate to different contexts and situations.
Interesting. Something else that I've noticed is sort of how quickly these trends come and go. There's like a very, very short period of time where they're relevant and then they just slip away. Like, for example, I've seen like on my emails, all these different brands sending emails and they're like, oh, so cutesy, so demure, because that was a cultural moment. But do you notice how like within maybe even 2 days that becomes kind of a bit old? Do you know what that's about?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, like with the rise of so many new terms and stuff being, you know, proliferated through the internet, I think, you know, these days, I mean, slang has always been in existence, right? And youth have always had kind of had their own kind of distinct slang that kind of relates to their unique eras. But the role of the internet is kind of such that we're getting like so many new terms introduced kind of constantly. So there's a kind of high level of like churn and burn, right? And not all the innovations are going to have staying power. So we are kind of getting that kind of revolving door of new terms cropping up and just as quickly being discarded in favor of a new replacement. And, you know, what kind of stays around and what fades away is really going to be down to kind of what's happening, you know, in the culture, right? So we got a whole bunch of new terms that kind of, you know, cropped up during, you know, the height of the pandemic that now, you know, we don't see in use quite so often. And it's mainly because, like, you know, the contexts around, you know, the pandemic, like isolation and ISO and, you know, COVID and that kind of thing, like, are maybe less relevant to people's day-to-day lives. You know, despite the fact that obviously COVID has continued, people aren't interacting with it in the same way. And so, you know, all of those kinds of changes and, you know, the constant you know, changes in our media consumption. You know, we're getting new media kind of constantly. You know, if we think about the role of like, you know, streaming applications and stuff, you know, we're constantly being exposed to like, you know, more new media. And that means that, you know, we're getting constantly more and more new input, which obviously means then there's more opportunity to kind of innovate, create new forms, and then, you know, leave behind those that we've created yesterday in favor of those we want to use tomorrow, that kind of thing.
I've just had someone text in a really interesting question that I thought I'd pose to you. They said, how could the widespread acceptance and mainstream use of minorities' culture be a bad thing for that culture, since all words that are in the public vernacular have sort of lost contact with their etymological roots?
As in, how would it be bad for those, like...
Yeah, like how, people? Since it's so far removed from the minorities' culture, how can we sort of bring that back to those minorities?
Well, I think it's more about, it's not necessarily like just abandoning those terms. It's more about just understanding that they do have origins beyond the internet, right? And so understanding what those terms mean to communities, and that, you know, the way that they're used on the internet isn't necessarily indicative of how they can and should be understood across all communities and contexts, I think is most important there. So, like, I'd say knowledge and understanding is probably better than complete avoidance.
Definitely.
In most cases.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Jess. That was awesome.
No problems at all.
Thank you.